Thank you, Elazar. Elazar is the technique man. Thank you. Yesterday we said that we begin by the questions. So Gani had a question first, and then Mr.
Aaron.
Okay, Gani, please.
What do you call about a poor man? I mean, it could be anybody who's like almost on the verge of poverty, or somebody who's just working class. You know, he doesn't make enough money to be middle class. He's not starving, but he's still poor. I mean, what is the verdict on such a person, that he gives tzedakah even though he's poor? He doesn't have much himself, but he sees somebody else who's worse off than him. He's like, I can't help it. He just gives him tzedakah.
Okay, so you have two considerations. Concerning someone who is poor, I asked once, Dayan, I had a problem with this. He told me that if someone doesn't have the basic needs that he needs to live decently, so he has to be considered as a poor man. For instance, you have three categories in the Shulchan Aruch. There is the Shulchan Aruch Yoredea Siman Resh Nun Hei, which is entitled Le'archit Mikabarata. You should get away from getting tzedakah, from getting charity. And there you have three categories. The first, we saw two categories yesterday, and a third one a bit quickly. The first category is someone who doesn't need charity, and nevertheless he is begging. So Shulchan Aruch says that before he finishes his life, he will be really in need. God will do in such a way that he will be really in need. On the extreme opposite, you have someone who cannot live without charity. That means if he doesn't take charity, and the Shulchan Aruch says there are three examples: an old man, a zaken, chole, a man who cannot live because he is ill, and at that time he didn't have the insurances as we have today. Also, you have to take this into account. And Baal Yisurim, someone who is suffering so much that he cannot work. So this person, if he doesn't take charity, he's going to die. And if nevertheless he wants to be proud and say, no, I don't take charity, it's called a suicide. And what he does is only sins and faults. This is the Shulchan Aruch. It's not good at all. It's a false pride. Because first of all, you have to save your life. And in the middle, you have someone who could live without charity, but nevertheless, in hardship, he doesn't sleep on a mattress, he sleeps on the floor. Of course, it won't kill him, but it's hard. So this man has the right to take charity. So that means that we don't expect a person to take charity only when he is on the verge of death. No, when the basic needs are not satisfied, he's entitled to take charity. Nevertheless, since this man is not going to die if he doesn't take charity, he's going to live very, very, very hard life, but he's not going to die, so he's also authorized not to take charity. Someone who is going to die without charity is not permitted, is not authorized, is not allowed to avoid charity, because it's a suicide. But here, this man is allowed because he can live without charity very, very, in very hard conditions, but he can. So, if this man chooses to take charity, he has the right. If he chooses not to take charity, he will be blessed. And before he finishes his life, he will give to the other people. Now, to answer the question completely, we have another case. A case of a man who was rich, and suddenly he fell down. He doesn't have any money. So if we can, we have the mitzvah to put him back to his previous level. Dei machsoro asher yatsar lo, the pasuk says, what is lacking in his life. That means what he had before he doesn't have. And there the rabbis say, even if he had luxury habits, and we should try to give him back. Why? Because we try to help someone, and just the consideration for him of the difference between before and now can make him suffer. So we have to bridge the gap between the past and today's situation. Of course, if we can. Yes? If you have someone who doesn't have to eat, and you have a man who was rich and became poor, and you cannot give to both of them, priority is to give food to the man who doesn't have to eat. But if you can, you have to give to this previous rich man, yes, as much as you can in order to make him rich again.
No, my question was, what about like a poor man that gives tzedakah? Not necessarily.
A poor man who gives tzedakah. It's written like this. It's written, anoten pruta la'ani b'sha'at dochako. Someone is blessed if he gives money to a poor when the poor man is, how do you say, in a tight, yes, situation. Dochako means tight. He doesn't have. He's like this, he's oppressed by poverty. But there is another translation. Anoten pruta le'ani b'sha'at dochako. If a man gives money to a poor man, when he is the donor, b'sha'at dochako, in a situation where when he is oppressed by needs, by poverty, when you force yourself to give money, although you don't have so much money, yes, so it's a special blessing that you can expect from this. Anoten pruta la'ani. This is the second translation of the sentence. Someone who gives money to a poor man, b'sha'at dochako, at the time when he is in hardship, when the donor is in hardship. So he is entitled to receive a special blessing from this. Why? Because we say, lefum tzara agra. The reward of a mitzvah is according to the toil, to the difficulty of the mitzvah itself. Aaron.
Okay, a minor question which just came up. If you spoke about a well-to-do man, so let's say you have a man who worked all of his life, he came from a well-to-do family, and all of a sudden he became poor. So, you know, he's used to having fancy cars and servants and so forth. Okay. In contrast to him, you have a fellow who never worked. He was a bum and everything else. And he hit the lottery. And for a year or less, you know, he had servants and fancy cars and so forth. And then he went bankrupt. Like the one who worked and went bankrupt. So, is there a distinction in these two cases between who, in other words, to bridge the gap, as you said, between, you know, what he had and poverty, between the one who always worked all of his life and built himself up and gave tzedakah, as opposed to the one, he never gave tzedakah, he lucked out, you know, he hit the lottery, and then he lost, he gambled it away with him. So, is there a difference between these two cases because of the way they came into the wealth or whatever, or there isn't it?
According to your question, I understand between the lines that somehow, it's not a criticism, it's just what I think,
right.
Somehow you cannot bear the people who make money without working. For you, it's like something which is not just. I feel this.
In other words, right, because it would seem to me, if you came to me and said, hey, this guy, he hit the lottery, and 10 days later, he gambled it all away. But during the 10 days, he had a $10 million house outside of L.A., he had a Rolls Royce, he had a maid and a butler and so forth, you know, so I would say, I don't care about him. I'm not going to give him one dime. I mean, if he needs food, clothing, and shelter, you know, maybe I'll donate for that. But the one who worked his way, maybe he inherited, but he didn't gamble the way. Something happened, a world event happened, you lost everything. And you have to bridge the gap. So I guess to rephrase the question, bridging the gap, it is the one who worked his way into it and had it more justifiable than the one who just hit the lottery, a bum, he just hit the lottery. You see what I'm saying?
I understand very well, and I'm going to ask you another question.
Okay.
Suppose Queen Elizabeth.
Right.
She's one of the richest persons in the world.
Right.
Okay, fine. Okay, suppose now there is a coup d'etat. in Great Britain.
Right.
Yes. And the queen is no more the queen. And all the money that she has in the world is confiscated by the new revolution in Great Britain.
Okay.
So she is poor. She doesn't have anything. And you know for sure that all the money that she had, she didn't work for this. I think that Queen Elizabeth never stood up in the morning to go to the factory to work and so on. She never worked. But nevertheless, she is one of the richest person, wealthiest person in the world. And suddenly there is a coup d'etat in Great Britain. She doesn't have a penny. She is penniless. Should we help her? Yes or no?
So we're really talking about three categories. Someone who never had anything, always poor and hit the lottery. Someone who didn't inherit when he was born well, but he worked his way into it. And very diligently, tzedakah and so forth. And somebody who was a noble person and discarded because of the title.
I think like
so
this. In the case of a noble person, or in the case of a guy who hit the lottery,
right.
There was no work to get to wealth. No,
right.
No, they didn't work. But nevertheless, what you have to take into account, yes, you cannot punish someone because he never worked. The fact is that now there is a psychological nightmare in his life. Why? Because he was very rich. Whatever was the source, the origin of his richness, that he was very rich, yes, and suddenly he became poor, so the psychological problem that he has is the same, I can see, as someone who worked for wealth. So the reason, I mean, Chazal say that we have to care for the psychological downfall, the breakdown, the fact that he was rich and he is no more. So I think there is no difference if he hit the lottery or he was rich by heritage or anything.
But if you, like Queen Elizabeth, that was her whole life. She was used to it, even though she didn't work for it. Okay. But the one who hit the lottery, and I emphasize it was, let's say, 6 months or 3 months that he had the money and he gambles it away. So he wasn't his whole life, wasn't the greater part of his life that he was used to everything. But I would agree, food, clothing, and shelter, the basic needs, you have to provide for him, even as he did before he hit the lottery.
I understand. I didn't see
a difference. There are differences.
No, I didn't see a difference in Chazal if he was rich for a long time or rich for a short time. He was rich. That means that anyway, the blow, the psychological blow is the same. He was rich and suddenly he's poor. You have to help him. You understand? This is very important. Okay, yes?
I just have a quick question and a comment going back there. Isn't like, you know, like someone who wins the lottery, isn't like pretty much somebody's parnasa doled out by Hashem even before they're born? First of all, like, I mean, like someone might have the, you know, like before he's even born, like Hashem knows he's going to gain this much money. Sort of like having a lot of money is actually also a test of what you're going to do with the money. And how, you know, like, you're going to work in this world.
The thing is like this. Of course, Hashem has his own thoughts. Nothing is by chance, you know.
Predetermined.
We say, yeah, everything is determined.
Predetermined.
Yeah. No, according to our merits. It's not just predetermined like a tyrant like this, who decides this and this. God is not a tyrant. God has criteria, yeah, what to give to this man or to this man and so on. And mezonotov shel adam ketzuvim merosh shana ad rosh shana. What you are going to earn during the year, yes, is determined from Rosh Hashanah to the next Rosh Hashanah. Except two things. It's written in the Mishnah Berurah, you shouldn't spend out the money too much because you don't know what was determined for you, if it's much or not. Except two things that you can spend out all that you want, and God is going to add to your money, Otzaot Shabbat v'Yom Tov, the expenses of Shabbos and Yom Tov. Yes, it's not comprised, it's not included in what has been decided for you this year. It's out. Yeah, out the budget. Yeah? Say budget in English?
Budget.
Budget, excuse me. French we say budget. Budget. It's out the budget. and also what you spend out for the education of your children in Torah. These two things you can spend out as much as you want. So now, of course, we are tested on money. If someone is very rich, we see in Gemara Ketuvot, like Dimon Ben Gurion was very, very rich, and he gave a lot of tzedakah. But the Gemara says he gave tzedakah, two explanations, he became very poor. Why? The Gemara gives two explanations. One explanation is because he wanted to show off with charity. So he became poor instead of becoming richer. And the second explanation is he gave a lot of money, but according to what he had, it was not enough. Yes, for instance, if I give today 10 cents to tzedakah and no more, I can say I gave tzedakah all my life long, but it's nothing. It's not enough because I have a salary and 10 cents, 10 agurot is nothing. But if someone is Bill Gates and he gives every day $1 million, for him $1 million, it's like 10 cents for me. I don't know, I suppose, yeah? Okay, so it was the case of, according to the second answer, this was the case of Dimon Ben Gurion. He gave a lot, but not according to his level of wealth. That's the reason why he became poor. So we are tested on money all the time. All the time. And according to the way we use the money today and tomorrow and so on, God gives more or less.
Okay, my question is, I had an example, a true life example, and I was thinking of something yesterday, but it pertains to it. That basically, like, what can you do if someone comes to you and asks for tzedakah, and you know that you can't give them money because they're going to use the money for the wrong purposes? For example, someone who is clearly what you would call a narcomani, and like a drug addict.
But or an alcoholist.
Or an alcoholic. I went, let's say, something different, but sort of along the same lines. I went to a shiva 3 weeks ago, right after Tisha B'Av. And I went to the best mincha, and there was no mincha. But there was a man sitting there, and he was saying, please buy me something to eat. And usually if someone asks me, please buy me something to eat, right away I think, okay, no problem. Buying food for someone is, you know, it can't be so bad. But the man was very overweight, and he had still food in his beard, like left, that he had just gotten done eating. And he lied to me. After that, he lied to me. He said, I haven't eaten all day. And I can see that he had. I mean, there was physical evidence there. And he said, and buy me a sandwich with 18% shemen, like 18% fat cheese, and buy me a chocolate milk, and buy like the unhealthiest menu that you could see. You could see, like, this is like giving a drug addict drugs. And so I said, I thought about it, and I said, okay, I'll get you something to eat. I thought maybe I'll give him something to eat, but not exactly what he ordered, just something to nourish him. But then he took me aside and said, give me 200 shekels, I need new clothes. And he had clothes that were better than mine.
If you have a suspicion, I don't think you have to ask a posek, but according to what I heard, if you have a suspicion, you don't have to give, you know, because it's true that money is precious and you have to give for good purpose. Yes, if you know, anyway, if you know that someone is alcoholic or drug addicted, yeah?
But that, in that instance, you can give them food.
No, okay, no. Money you shouldn't give him because you encourage his disease, so to say. And food, even food, if you know that this man was fat, yeah? How do you say? Stout, yeah?
Obese.
Stout.
Yeah.
And you see that he's eating normally and he had food in his beard, which is not clean, yes? But so I wouldn't have given in this case. I don't think so. Because
some people should be asking for money and they have a Galaxy G6 after they start phoning up. So then they phone up for a Galaxy G6. Then they thought then they can.
That could be tricky because he could have had someone give him that Galaxy G6. So I know this guy is a Sonic, he needs a cell phone to, like, you know, do things. But he still might not be working, he still might not be able to pay, he still might not have to put food on his table for Shabbat. And someone, like, you don't know where you got the...
What is the best? The best one is the 4G.
What's it?
The 4G is the best one, yeah?
I don't know, I just...
I was once, listen to this story, it's a good story. I was once at a bar mitzvah. And at this bar mitzvah was a very, very wealthy man. He has a factory in Mishor Adamim. He owns a factory, very wealthy man. And this young guy came round, he's about 23, 25, something like that, asking for money. And he came up to this rich guy who has his factory, and he says, look, if you come to my factory tomorrow, at 8 o'clock, I'll give you a job. You don't need to go around begging for money. He said, I'll give you a job. But the guy didn't say, okay, I'll take the job, I'll go there and take it. I said, oh, no, I'd rather go around begging. He said, so if you give people money, it causes a backlog, so they don't want to work after. He said, I would have given him a job if he'd have come, but he wouldn't come, he didn't accept it.
I think the Rambam said, once you keep doing this, it's hard to get, you can never get out of it. Once
I think it's a mental complaint. Batlanut is, idling becomes a mental complaint. He didn't want to work, he'd rather be poor and go around begging than go to work.
Yeah, Rambam Zev, who was teaching here many years ago when I was a student in Yitz Yeshiva, Rambam Zev told us that he knew a guy who was living on begging, and he didn't want to work. He was healthy, he could work. So he asked him, why don't you work? So he said that what he's gaining on begging is more than any work. So that's the reason why he wanted to stay like this. But this is clearly forbidden to do like this. And it's not only forbidden, it's dangerous, because Chas v'Shalom, he can be cursed by God for what he does, that he's cheating the people. Because normally when someone asks for money, that means that he doesn't have the means to work. If he has the means to work, it's called that he's cheating. Okay, gentlemen, today, last question, let's say, because otherwise we cannot begin, yeah.
What about, like, for example, people, like, this very much applies to us due to recent events. A lot of Jewish people had grandparents, parents that were rich, used to own things, or their descendants from, like, David HaMelech or something, and they're like, they remember that their ancestors, either recently or some time ago, were very rich, you know, and nowadays they're not so rich, they're poor. They see, like, Goyim walking around with their property. They know that the Swiss are not giving back the money that they stole. They know that their ancestors' tea filings are held in a Swiss bank vault. I mean, you know, what do we say?
Is like what of his previous level, I think it doesn't apply to the ancestors, because the fact that someone was accustomed to wealth and suddenly he lost everything, this is one thing. You say he lost everything or he lose? He lost everything, excuse me. But if someone knows that he's ancestors and he was, it's not the same feeling. Of course he knows, but it's someone who experienced wealth. He was very wealthy with a very fancy car and so on, and he became poor. Every day, you know, it's like a man who was loving his wife, and suddenly his wife is going away. So it's a terrible breakdown, you know. Same thing with money, in a way. But if someone knows that his grandfather had a wonderful wife, and they were in love of each other, and he doesn't find this, it's not the same suffering. Yeah? If someone was in love with a woman and he married this woman and then she suddenly leaves him and she goes with someone else, Chas v'Shalom, it's a terrible suffering. But if someone knows that his grandfather was in love with his grandmother, it was a wonderful couple, but he doesn't find, I don't think that this can add so much to his suffering. He's suffering, but he doesn't have a woman. Okay. But the fact that his grandfather had, I don't think that it's adding to his suffering so much. It's not the same case. Same thing with money.
In the Gemara, doesn't it also say that a man could be rich all his life, and then towards the end of his life, he could lose all his money because Hashem doesn't want his children to inherit that money? Like on purpose?
It's in the Gemara Shabbos there.
When she's looking for food throughout the...
This is the Gemara Ketuvot, yeah. In Gemara Ketuvot, we speak of Nadimon Ben Gurion, yeah. And his daughter was looking for food among the dung of the Arabic donkeys.
Yeah.
And it's very interesting because there it's written that Umma Shachela, some low people, and Rashi says, what does it mean, low people? Because there were Arabs who were living in tents. They didn't have houses even. I mean, not low in the meaning of moral sense, but
Lao in the meaning of social ascent, yeah, means that, and I was thinking today, who is, but she was, Nagdimon Bengos was very rich, and his daughter had to pick up, you know, straw among the feces, the dung of the donkeys of the Arab, and the Arabs there are called, these Arabs in these time, low people, socially speaking, not morally speaking, because they were living in tents, they didn't have houses even. So I say to my Talmidim, it's very interesting, because we speak of the Bat Shel Nagdimon Ben Gurion, the daughter of Nagdimon Ben Gurion. And today, who is the daughter of Ben Gurion? The state of Israel. The state of Israel is the daughter of Ben Gurion. And the Gemara says there that they are under the animals of these people who lives in tents, who live in tents. And I say today, people who live in tents are, so to say, Palestinian refugees who still live in tents, yeah? Because they want to say, you see, we have refugees that are not yet integrated. Israel integrated all the Jews who were chased from Arabic countries. Yes? Mm-hmm. You don't see them, because now they are working and so on, they are integrated, yeah? The millions of Jews who were chased from Egypt, from North Africa, from this, and so on, from Syria. Yes, we didn't leave them in tents on purpose to say to the whole world, we see, we have refugees. Yeah, but they do it, okay? And these people who live in tents, they have also animals. Who are the animals? The people who are ready to commit suicide. So there it says that the daughter of Ben Gurion is falling under the animals of these people who are low people because they live in tents. Rashi explains like this. So I was saying, there is an actual signification, okay? But never say that I say that the Arabs are low people. No, it's not this. It's socially speaking, they live in a low situation, and nevertheless she had to manage to find some straw among the feces, the dung of the animals, of the donkeys of these people. This is the situation. This is getting very low when you are very rich. Okay. Today we are going to speak concerning Rosh Hashanah, the prayer of Rosh Hashanah. It will take time, it's very rich, and indeed I will focus only on one thing, the Haftarah of Rosh Hashanah. The Haftarah of Rosh Hashanah is the prayer of Chana, the first day of Rosh Hashanah. And our sages say that it's not just by chance that this Haftarah is on that day or that day and so on. So if the Haftarah was chosen in Shmuel, that means the excerpt when Chana is praying to get a child because she was not fertile. She was, barren, yeah? And she couldn't have a child, so she came to pray in the sanctuary of Shiloh. That was not yet the temple of Jerusalem. It was the sanctuary of Shiloh. And she was listened to. She got a child in the same year. And this child was Shmuel. So it's not by chance that we read this on Rosh Hashanah. Our sages say that in this you find the key of the prayer of Rosh Hashanah. Yeah? What we have to ask from Rosh Hashanah, and how do we have to ask, and what are the best chances to get what you want in Rosh Hashanah, all this in the prayer of Chana. First of all, I want to say, there is a very interesting thing that I did not notice it, I read it. There are many couples in the Bible, in the Tanakh, where you see that the woman cannot have children. She is barren. She is not fertile. And nevertheless, there is a big love in the couple, and despite this obstacle, and at the end, a child is born, and he is a very, very great child for the whole Am Israel, for the whole people of Israel. So, first, we can see Avraham and Sarah. Avraham and Sarah. Sarah couldn't have a child, but at the end they had Yitzchak, and Yitzchak was one of our forefathers. Yeah? Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Rivka couldn't have a child during 10 years, and Yitzchak prayed for her, and they had Yaakov. Yaakov and Rachel couldn't have, she couldn't have a child, and Yaakov prayed for her, and so on. And then she had a child, he was Yosef, a very big leader. Yeah? Here, Shmuel had two wives. One is Penina, she has children, and the other one is Hana, she doesn't have children. And we'll see in the text, when Hana is afflicted by the fact that she doesn't have children, so Elkanah tells her, Lamatifki, why do you cry? Alo anochi tov lach me'asara banim. Am I not better for you than 10 children? So he emphasizes the quality of relationship in the couple. Am I not better for you than 10 children? And at the end, they have Shmuel. You have two books in the Tanakh with the name of Shmuel. Shmuel was a very big prophet, Shmuel Hanavi. Yeah, not only because there is a street in Jerusalem with this name, Shmuel Hanavi. Yes? Okay, you wanted to say? Shimshon.
Shimshon was not as great, but the same circumstances.
Of course.
Manoah and
Manoah, yeah. Okay, so we see it's all the time like this. So why? Why? So I saw an article by a religious psychoanalyst, Eliane Amado-Lévy-Valency. And she says like this, the lesson that we draw from this is the fact that the psychological balance, the psychological, how to say in English, rayonnement. When someone is irradiating good things,
you radiation.
Say,
radiation.
Radiation. I mean, the psychological.
Radiates.
When someone radiates good things, you know, yeah, like all these people that I have quoted, mentioned, yes, it comes from the love of the couple. It means the balance of a child begins before his birth. If there is love between the man and the woman, so the child will be a big man. And here we know that there is love. Why? Because Sarah, Abraham loves Sarah. He has a child already from Agar, but nevertheless he wants a child from Sarah. This proves the love of Abraham towards Sarah. And Yitzhak, 10 years he stayed with her, although she was barren, and she prayed for her 10 years. And the text said that when Yitzhak took his wife, Rivka, to the tent, he married her, he took her to the tent of his mother, Sarah, and he loved her. And also the same thing with Yaakov. Vayavod Yaakov beRachel sheva shanim vayu beinav ki amim achadim ba'avato ota. Yaakov worked 7 years to get Rachel, because these were the conditions of his father-in-law, Laban. But these 7 years were like a few days in his eyes, because he loved her so much. Be'avato ota. So since he loved this girl, he was ready to work for her 7 years, and for him it was like several days. Why? Because when you have something very precious, whatever the money you give for this thing which is very precious, in your eyes you say it's nothing compared to what I get. Compared to the jewel that I get, the money that I give is nothing. So the 7 years of Yaakov, when he worked for Sarah, for him it was nothing. It was just little money, just several days. In his eyes, so much he was loving this woman. And same thing with Elkanah and Hana. Elkanah says to Hana, why do you weep? Why do you cry? Because you don't have children. Am I not good for you as much as 10 children? So you see the love of the couple. And when at the end they are blessed with a child, it's not an ordinary child. It's a very, very great child. So the lesson to draw from this is the fact that the balance, the strength, the power of giving of the personality comes from the love of the family, the harmony there is between the couple. You understand? Okay, so now I'm going to give you the text. We won't translate everything, just some sentences. And this is the Haftarah of Rosh Hashanah. Have it? One second. I prefer giving you the whole thing, so it will be more convenient for me. Gani. You have? Then one second. Yes. And now.
This is the third page.
Yeah, third page. Okay, let's translate. I don't want to make a lecture just of translation, but just some words here and there, so we'll get to the Haftarah of Rosh Hashanah. First sentence: Ish echad min haramatayim tzofim me'arif chayim u'shmuel kana ben Yerocham ben Eliyahu ben Tochu ben Tzuf Efrati. One man from Ramatayim. Just a bit of grammar in Hebrew. You have the plural im for the masculine, ot for the feminine, and aim for the pair. For instance, you have two hands, yadaim. Yeah? Here, you have two eyes, enaim, aim, oznaim. Yeah? Scales, moznaim. You have two trays in scales, yeah? So, moznaim. Here you have a place which is called Givataim. Why Givataim? Because Giva is a hill. Givataim means two hills. And Ramataim, Rama means height. Yeah, for instance, Golan Heights. Yeah? So Ramataim means two heights. You understand? Like two hills. Gani, are you with me?
Yes.
Okay, let's take the second page. One second. Yeah. Okay. Let's take the second page. You have it? So you have left and right page. Yes? On the right page, you take the bottom line. The end of the bottom line on the right page. Vayomer la el kana. You have it? Second page, right side of the second page, bottom line, last words of the bottom line. Vayomer la Elkanah. You have it. You have it? Give me. Yeah, Vayomer la Elkanah. That's it.
The page numbers on the right are not clear.
No, the page.
Write it out.
Yeah, that's it.
That's the best way to
do it. Yeah, okay. You have it? Gani.
Yeah, Ken.
And you? You have it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay. Vayomer la Elkanah Isha. And he told her, Elkanah, in Hebrew, the verb is before the, how do you say, the subject, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? Vayomer la Elkanah, Elkanah told her, Isha. Isha means not a woman, you have a yud. Her man, Isha. Yeah, because Ish is a man. If it was Isha in the meaning of
in the meaning of a woman, you wouldn't have the yud. You have the yud means her ish, her man. Chana, lame tivki. Chana, why do you weep? Velama lo tochli, and why you don't eat? Velama yira levaver, why your heart, levaver, is afflicted? Alo anochi tov la, am I not good for you? Me'asara banim, more than 10 children. Yeah? And now, let's go further. Okay? The fourth line of this page. Vayi marat nefesh. Sarah was afflicted. She was sad. Vatitpalel al Hashem, and she prayed to God. Ubacho tivke, and she cried. She wept. It's not just by chance that we say here that she wept. Nothing is by chance in a verse. The Gemara in Bava Metzia says that since the temple has been destroyed, the gates of prayer are closed. But even if the gates of prayer are closed, the gates of tears are open. That mean, it doesn't mean that when you pray you're never answered, but not as before. But nevertheless, the gates of tears, when someone cries, is answered. And here we see that she cried because she needs a child. Vatidor neder. See what she did. She made a vow. Yeah? Vatomer, and she said, Hashem Tzevaot, Im ra'o tire boni, if you consider my affliction, ba'oni amatecha, the affliction of your servant, uzchartani, and you remember me, ve'lo tishkach et amatecha, and you won't forget your servant, ve'natata la'amatecha zera anashim, and you will give to your servant a descendant, a son, ve'netativ la'ashem. I will give this son to God. Let's take the last page. Kol yemei chayav, all the days of his life, umora lo yavor al rosho, and the razor won't pass on his head. That means that Shmuel was a Nazir. Yes, according to one opinion. What do you say?
Similar to Shimson.
Yeah, mora mora. We make gzera shava mora mora in the Gemara of Nazir there at the end of the Gemara. Ve'aya. So, here, she got what she wanted. But see what she did. She wept, and she promised that if she gets this, she will do something for God. It's not just a selfish desire. And she get it too. She got it. So, remember that Rosh Hashanah is a propitious time to get all that we want. It's written, Rosh Hashanah is a propitious time to get bnei chaye mezoine, children, life, parnasa, and food, and so on, all that you need, mezoine. But you have to know how to ask, and it's not so simple. Just for the time being, I speak in general terms. In general terms, she cried, and she promised that if she gets, she will do something for God with what she has, what she will get. Yeah. We see this. And it's not by chance that this is read on Rosh Hashanah. The Rosh Hashanah, which is the day when our sages say, it's a good day to ask all that you need. Yes?
I mean to request.
To request, yeah. To request.
The day to request.
Yeah.
What if you request the return of the third temple?
It's a good day to ask for it. And to request it, and maybe your prayer, if it's very sincere, will hasten the moment of the third temple. It's written that when we pray at the Kotel HaMaravi, en tefila chozeret reikan, there is no prayer which comes back with empty bag, so to say. Yeah? Oh, I didn't get. Maybe in the next life, maybe one day, it's recorded there. Yeah? There will be something, but we don't know yet what, but there will be something. And Fila Chuzeret Veikan, I heard this concerning the prayer in the Kotel HaMaravi. Ve'aya, and it was. Ki irbeta leitpalel. She was praying so much. Irbeta, arbe means much. Lifnei Hashem. Ve'eli, Eli was the priest of this temple, of this sanctuary of Shiloh. Shomer et pi'ah, observes his mouth. What does it mean, he observes his mouth? He's watching his mouth. Rashi explains, he's waiting. We see this, for instance, when Yosef said his dream to his father and his brothers. The brothers were very cross at him because of this dream, which was so significant. But the father, it's written, Ve'aviv shamar et hadavar. His father kept the thing. And Rashi there explains, he was waiting for the time the dream will be realized. And it became realized that Yosef became almost the king of Egypt. Yeah, so Shomer, here, the same thing Rashi explains, he was waiting. Eli was waiting. V'chana imedaberet el liba. And Chana was speaking to her heart. Rak sefatea na'ot. Only her lips were moving. It's very interesting because today you have madregot na'ot. The escalator. Escalator?
Escalator.
The escalator is called in Hebrew madregot na'ot, the moving stairs. And you have the same word here. They all took from the Bible. Yeah? Svatea na'ot. Her lips were moving. Ve'kola lo yishamea. And you couldn't hear her voice. Vayachshavea Eli lishikora. And Eli thought that she was drunk. Vayomer elea Eli. Eli told her, this is the after of Rosh Hashanah, we are in the middle, yeah? Eli told her, Ad matai, till when? Tishtakrim, you will be drunk. Yes? In the temple of God. Asiri etine, take away your wine, me'alayim, from you. Vata'an Chana, and Chana answered to him, Batomer, and she said, Lo Adoni, no, my master, I'm not drunk, that means. Isha keshat ruach anochi. I'm an afflicted woman. Ve'yain ve'shechar lo shatiti. I didn't drink any wine or any alcoholic beverage. Va'eshpor et nafshi lifnei Hashem. I'm just pouring out my soul in front of God.
This is where Chazal bring how to pray, how to daven, how to pray. That your lips should move, but no sound should come out.
That's
and
true.
It's in Talmud Bavli in 25.
And no, it's also
emotion in the now.
No, it's also the halacha. Yeah, the halacha is in the Shulchan Aruch. It's written in the Shulchan Aruch. When you pray the Shmona Esrei, your words should be not only mentally said, but you should say them with your lips, but nevertheless, it shouldn't be audible by anyone. And there, the Shulchan Aruch adds, but if someone cannot concentrate, yes, himself, in the Shmoneh Esrei, unless he says it in a loud voice, so to say, in an audible voice, so he is authorized to say it in a way which can be heard, provided that he doesn't pray at the synagogue with other people, because this could disturb the concentration of other people. And really, when I'm fully concentrated sometimes in the Shmoneh Esrei, and there is someone who is whispering his prayer, I hear his words, it takes all my concentration. Why? I will explain to you why. When you look for the Chametz in the night of Passover, you look with a candle, and the question is asked there, why not in the middle of the day? Why in the middle of the night? And the answer is that the candle in the middle of the day, you don't feel so much that it's helpful. But in the middle of the night, you know, it's focusing on everything. Yes? So you see the little details in the wall, if there is a crumbs, yes, and so on. You see crumbs in English?
Yeah.
Yeah, and so on. Okay? So that means a candle in the middle of the day, you don't see it. But in the middle of the night, it's something which is emphasized because all over is darkness. So the same thing with noise. When you learn at Yeshivat Mir, you have 1,000 pupils, students in the same room. They are all shouting to the Chavruta.
believe me, I was there, it doesn't disturb you. Yes? But when you are alone in the silence, everybody keeps silent, everybody is saying the Amida in a very silent way, and suddenly there is someone 1 meter from you, and you hear his words, you are no more in your words, you are in his words. You think of what he says, you don't think of what you should say. So that's the reason why the Shulchan Aruch says, you are entitled, you are allowed to say your prayer in a way which is audible, provided that you are not in the synagogue. It's very important to know this halacha.
Rabbi, speaking of people, couples who are barren, what about couples that can't find their significant other? For years, a person, you know, like for example, it took my father until he was 52 to meet my mother. Like a man, you know, a woman, or my mother, she married my father when she was in her 30s. You know, a man and a woman, they, you know, they look for somebody for years and years, and their best years have gone by, you know, I'm going to say, and they meet somebody, and they end up having children late. Is that kind of similar?
They end up with children.
Yes, but it's late, you know, like, you have couples that are, like, past the age, a woman over her 20s, past her 20s, man in middle age, you know? I mean, or sometimes they're both middle age.
Listen, you can never know. I always say that my father got married after 40, yes? My father got married after 40, and nevertheless, he had wonderful children. Yes? It's a joke. I want to tell you several things concerning this. It's a long question. It's out of the topic, but it's an interesting question. I will answer, but then I want to go back to the topic. You have to understand one thing. It's written, Lutov Yota Adam Levato. It's not good for a man to be alone. So this is written when Adam, when God wanted a wife for Adam, he said, first of all, it's not good for a man to be alone. Eselo Ezer Kenegdo. I will do some help from this man, according to him, literally speaking, and this was the wife that he was expecting. And we can ask a question. It's written, Loto Veyota Adam Levado. Levado means alone. It's not good for a man to be alone. And nevertheless, we see, Vayivater Yaakov Levado Vayavek Ishimo Adalot HaShachar. That Yaakov was left alone. And the angel of Esav, in the form of man, struggled with him, fought with him the whole night. And our sages say, this is an announcement of Yaakov, namely the Jewish people, which will have to struggle to fight the whole night of exile with the nations, Adalot HaShachar, till the dawn is rising up, that means Mashiach. And Bilam said, Am Levadat Yishkon, these people will dwell alone, the Jewish people. And it's a blessing in the mouth of Bilam, because Bilam wanted to curse the Jewish people. Yes? But nevertheless, God made it such a way that there were only blessings from his mouth. And some blessings we say today, Matovu alecha Yaakov, Mishkat lecha Yisrael. So, the question is, how can it be a blessing to be alone? Am levadad yishkon. These people will dwell alone. And how is it possible that Yaakov, namely, not only Yaakov, our ancestor, but the Jewish people that we can understand through the word Yaakov, Vayivater Levado, was left alone and fight alone the whole night till the dawn. But it's written in your Torah, it's not good to be alone. So I answer your question. In Torah you have always what is called Lechatchila and Bediavad, a priori and a posteriori. That means that a priori, Mr. Belaish, you should never choose to be alone. You have to do all your best not to stay alone, to meet and so on. But you have to know that if you did all your best and nevertheless it doesn't come, you shouldn't cry on your loneliness. Why? Because sometimes there are bad things When you use them for good, they become bad, good things. If someone is alone, but nevertheless he says, I won't commit a sin with a woman, I won't do things which are forbidden, and I will try my best to get all my energy to share my life with other people, to make lectures, and to do this, and to do this. In the meantime, I'm looking for a wife, but nevertheless, I don't just sit like in Tisha B'Av and cry. I'm doing. He's repairing a lot of things through this. You can never know what he was in a previous life, in a previous Gilgul. Maybe this is his trial, and he repairs a lot of things through this. Just the thing is, of course, you should never choose to be alone. We are not like vikers, you know. For them, it can be a calling to be alone, because this is part of their task, of their duty. But we don't have the same ambitions. We think that a man, a Jewish man, a rabbi, so much more, should be married. But if he tried all his best, and he's nevertheless he's not married, we cannot get married as you buy a pair of shoes. She also has to agree with you. If she doesn't agree, what can you do? You cannot do anything. Yes, she doesn't want to marry you. You cannot do anything. In the meantime, you have to struggle in order to make the best as you can. Not to say that loneliness is a curse. Maybe for you it's a blessing, like for the Jewish people. Concerning what you say, that they have children very late, you don't know what is early, what is late. I want to explain to you why. One day, I heard a drasha by Rav, and Rav said, when you ask people in the street, what is a young man, what is an old man, many people will tell you, an old man, he doesn't have a lot of time in front of him, he's going to die very soon. But a young man has a lot of time in front of him. But he added, since we never know when we are going to die, we don't know really who is really young and who is really old. And not only this, that the age is not only the date of birth, yes, the number which is on your passport. Age is according to your health. Sometimes you see people, they had a heart attack at the age of 40. They are old. And you see people at the age of 80, they are like lions. They are young. All this depends on God. And it doesn't depend only on the date of birth. And also, what I want to add is very important. Many people in life, you tell them to do this, to do this, to build a family, to have children. They will tell you, in my age, you advise me to do such a thing.
At my age.
Yes? What do you say?
At my age.
That means they want to have plans, they want to have projects according to their age. In Torah, it's the contrary, it's the opposite. You're obliged to make plans. Mm-hmm. And God will give you the age of your plans. If you need to be young and healthy for such a plan, and your plan is a holy plan, God will give you health and youth. We see this from Abraham and Sarah. Yeah? Sarah has passed the age of being pregnant, and she nevertheless, she became pregnant. You see this, I want to finish with this. It's a wonderful story in the Gemara, Yechezkel. The king Yechezkel, the prophet Isaiah, comes to tell him, you are going to die very soon. Why? Because you made a fault. You didn't have children in this world. So he said, okay, I will have now. He said, it's too late. The decision is taken in heaven. So the king says to the prophet, take your decision and go away. I learned from my father, you can always tear a bad decision from God if you make teshuva. So he prayed, and he got 15 years more in order to have a child. What does it mean? He was very old because he was on the verge of death. Yes? When you are on the verge of death, you are very old. Even if you are 20, Chas v'Shalom. So he was very old. But since he changed his plan, God changed his age. He was young because he has a budget of 15 years more. Yes, why? That means that it's not the age which should determine your plans. Your plans determine your age by God. So you can never know really who is young and who is old. I saw the Lubavitcher River. It was 3 months, the last time I saw him, almost the last time, 3 months before 90 years old. 3 months before the 90th birthday. And people told me he's giving a dollar to everybody every Sunday to encourage the people to give after this dollar to charity, to encourage the people to charity. And I said, I want to see this. So it was a big synagogue, and I was in a corner, and I was studying. And from time to time, I was raising my eyes to see where the Rebbe is standing. And I can tell you, I was not told this. I saw it with my own eyes. He began giving the dollar 11 o'clock in the morning. How many times he was standing, he didn't go to the toilets, he didn't eat, he didn't drink, he didn't move, standing on his feet. How many times you can do this gesture? The secretary is pulling dollars on the standard, on the pulpit, yeah, and he is giving the dollars. One, one. See your arm after half an hour. And I can tell you, I saw him giving these dollars, yeah, from 11 o'clock a.m., from 11 o'clock a.m. till, say me the end. No. Till 6 p.m. 6 p.m. He was 90 years old. 7 hours. And people told me he's doing this every Sunday.
Non-stop.
Every Sunday. And he's 90 years old. That means age depends on God. It doesn't depend on my date of birth. You understand, Gani?
Well, my question actually was...
Listen, today I wanted the people to ask the questions because I was thinking that before I was saying the shiur, all the time I was speaking alone, so maybe I don't give a way to the people to express themselves. So today I gave you a lot of way to express yourselves, but tomorrow I want to go a bit forward in the shiur, because we have to finish this Haftarah for Shana and ask all the questions and to understand the core, the deep significance of this Haftarah, because it's a preparation for Rosh Hashanah, Mr. Belaish. Yes? You will be very famous because it's recorded, so everybody will hear of Mr. Belaish in the world.
I was just going to say, Rabbi, is the similarity, is there a similarity, is there a similar process?
Just don't lose the sheets, don't lose the pages. The similarity between?
Between the fact that a man wait, or a woman, they wait for their significant other, the person they're meant for many, many years, and have children at an, yes, age comes from God, but in the age people don't expect them to. And similar to couples that wait for a long time to have children, don't have children, but then after so many years finally have children.
And so the similarity between these people who had children for so many years and the other people, what?